Support comes from PERIC, working to construct the spaces where the St. Louis community works, learns, and grows. More at PERIC.com.
Missouri is in the midst of something unusual in politics, something with national implications. At the beginning of every decade, American democracy goes through a realignment. The nation counts its population through the census and redraws the lines of representation in Congress. The census is so fundamental to our form of government, it's codified in the first article of the Constitution. Then, in 2025, at the behest of President Donald Trump, several states, including Missouri, embarked on a plan to redistrict now, in the middle of the decade. Mid-decade realignment was relatively common in the 1800s, but it became somewhat rare through most of the last century and up until last year. Missouri has 8 congressional districts, and the new 2025 map skews the state even more in favor of Republicans. It aims to take Missouri from a 6-2 map to a 7-1 map. Most of this redrawing has been done through and around Kansas City and in the middle of the state, but boundaries in the St. Louis region have shifted too. We went out to ask Missourians what it feels like to suddenly be drawn into the other side of a divide. But many didn't even realize it was happening.
Hi, we're with St. Louis Public Radio.
Where are you with?
St. Louis Public Radio.
Okay.
And we're visiting you and your neighbors here to see if you guys have any thoughts about having your congressional district change. Are you aware of this?
So is this part of the gerrymander, like what they did for the whole state?
Yes, correct.
Well, that's about all I know. I don't know the ins and outs of it.
Your little square here has gone from the second district to the first district.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Bummer. Okay.
So is that gerrymandering?
Yeah, essentially, yes.
They didn't change the number of districts. They just changed who's in them.
Correct. That's correct. They moved the lines of who is in which district.
Did you know that?
And if you knew, that's the other question.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't actually know anything about it. I'm sorry. I'm like super apolitical, so I don't think I can help you guys.
To be honest, other than looking at a map of the new districts, I didn't really know much about what happened either, or where things stand today. So we're going to take a step back and get a primer on what all is happening with redistricting in Missouri. Meet me at the ballot box. I'm Luis Antonio Perez, and this is Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. Voters will be hitting the polls for midterm elections this year, first on August 4th for the Missouri primary election, and again in November for the general election. But lines of representation in Congress have suddenly changed. In this episode, we break down mid-decade redistricting in the state. How have congressional boundaries in Missouri changed, and why? What impact will these changes have at the local and national level? And how does the movie Air Bud play into all of this? Let's dive into the divisions of the 2026 Missouri congressional districts. In his second term, President Donald Trump faces several challenges, including low approval ratings, divisions within his own base, and the political reality that historically, the president's party loses some amount of power in midterm elections. Republicans currently hold control of the House of Representatives by a slim margin, and whether that margin is one member or 100 members, control of the chamber gives the winning party significant power. Last June, Trump directed states like Texas and Missouri to redraw their congressional districts in an effort to maintain a Republican majority in the House. In response, other states, led by both Republicans and Democrats, have completed or considered their own redistricting efforts. It's all created a scramble to gain a political advantage before this fall's election. If Democrats were to take control of the House in November, they could stymie much of Trump's agenda until the end of his term, and maybe even tie him up with impeachment hearings. Redistricting in the middle of the decade is unusual. The strategy is testing political norms and raising questions about the limits of partisan map making and even the health of American democracy itself. In Missouri, there's been high drama in the redistricting push. St. Louis Public Radio's politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum has been covering Missouri politics for almost 20 years. He meets me in the studio to help us understand the what, how, and why of this redrawing of lines in Missouri. So there's a lot happening here in Missouri around redistricting, and I'm wondering if you could just sort of help set us up, like take us to the very beginning. How did Missouri get so deeply involved in this national redistricting fight?
It's impossible to talk about where Missouri got into this fight without also talking about what happened in Texas. Last year, President Donald Trump and his administration clearly thought out a strategy that they were going to push Republican-led states to redraw their congressional districts in the middle of the decade because they were afraid of losing the House. The midterm election of a president's party is almost always bad for that party. The Republicans only have like a 3 or 4 seat majority, and they saw this as a way to mitigate some of that likelihood. So Texas was the first state to redraw their lines. And in the middle of the summer, there became more and more chatter that Missouri was going to follow them.
What is it about Missouri that made it sort of a prime candidate for also following in Texas's footsteps?
It has a Republican governor that can call a special session, and it also has a supermajority Republican legislature, which means that there can be some opposition to redrawing the map, and it'll still pass. I think that both of those things made Missouri a very attractive state to be part of this national strategy. For instance, you don't see Arizona, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Michigan in this category because they have Democratic governors or they have a legislature that is not Republican enough. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the clear reasons why Missouri was selected by the Trump administration.
And this sort of mid-decade restructuring or redistricting, rather, is might have been historically common, but not in modern political history. Why is that?
I think a lot of it comes down to Supreme Court decisions that required districts to be basically equal in population, and that didn't happen until the 1960s. Mm. So the easiest way to draw districts that essentially have the same population is doing it right after a census. Almost all the redistrictings we've seen in Missouri, with the exception of one that happened in the 1960s, have always happened in a year ending in 1 or 2. The last time a map was passed before this new one was 2022, but that was because the census was delayed because of COVID. So this was, I don't want to say it's unprecedented because it has happened within other people's lifetimes, but it certainly was unprecedented in recent Missouri political history. Mm.
So it's happened in other states within people's lifetime?
Yes. Oh, okay. Texas is a good example. There was a mid-decade redistricting in Texas in the 2000s. I believe after Republicans got control of that state legislature.
Okay.
And that was very controversial at the time. And there's also been instances, too, where there have been court cases that have struck down maps based off the Voting Rights Act or something else. And that has been those cases haven't really been finished until years that end in 3 or 4 or 5. So it's not completely unprecedented. It's just not common.
Gotcha. So let's get back to Missouri here. And so Governor Mike Kehoe introduced the Missouri First map. Can you tell us, what does that map do? You know, how does it affect, in particular, like the St. Louis area?
The vast majority of the impact is on the Kansas City area because the entire purpose of the map was to try to make Emanuel Cleaver's district in Kansas City unwinnable for a Democrat, or at least less winnable.
Let me paint a picture for you of how Missouri's congressional districts are being affected with this new map, the 2025 map. There are 8 districts in Missouri, and as Jason just said, the new map most dramatically affects Kansas City by redrawing the lines of 5 districts in the central corridor of Missouri. To understand where these districts used to be, let's think of it like a cross-state road trip from St. Louis to Kansas City. Under the old map, you'd start in St. Louis City, District 1, make your way through the county, District 2, then St. Charles County and the rural exurbs, District 3. Continue west until you reach Columbia, Missouri, pretty much the center of the state, at which point you're entering District 4. And as you approach Kansas City, you finally reach the urban bubble of District 5, currently represented by Emmanuel Cleaver, former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. St. Louis City, the county, rural Missouri, Columbia, more rural Missouri, and Kansas City. Under the new map, District 5, the Kansas City District, stretches way east and eats up big chunks of Districts 4 and 3, even past Jefferson City, almost all the way to Rolla, 200 miles away. So whereas before, the middle of Missouri was the border of Districts 3 and 4, it is now District 5, all the way into Kansas City. In the St. Louis area, the changes to the first district are not as significant, but still notable.
It wasn't changed as radically, but it did get less African American. There were largely white suburbs that border the city of St. Louis that were added in, like Maplewood and more of Richmond Heights.
So it sounds like for the St. Louis area, it's mostly like some sort of shifting of lines just a bit. But the real story, it sounds like that has a real impact, especially national impact, is the Kansas City story, where I guess the map is designed to break and take Kansas City, a seat that is represented by Emmanuel Cleaver.
Yes. And it basically slices Kansas City into three congressional districts. So yeah, it's a pretty massive change in Kansas City. It's much more so than St. Louis.
And I imagine, I mean, we know that there was opposition to this map. So what did folks that were opposed to this map, what course of action did they take?
So the legislative process, they didn't have much leverage. So as I mentioned before, the Republicans have a supermajority in the House and Senate. So they had the ability to just pass this map without a single Democratic vote, which they did. And they also had the ability to pass it with Republican opposition, which there was, especially in the House. So I think that it was fait accompli, even among people that really hated this map, that it was going to pass out of the legislature. Mm. What I don't think that everybody who was voting on this map realized is that because there were not enough Republicans in the House to make the map go into effect right away, it was subject to a referendum, which meant that if opponents gathered enough signatures, it would be brought up to a statewide vote in November. Traditionally, if you get enough votes for a referendum, it's supposed to freeze the bill in question from going into effect.
I see. So there's like, so it's like this administrative technicality fight, trying to figure out which, trying to fight for one map to be implemented than another.
I would say it's more than that, because I think that to get this up for a referendum required a very quick and very expensive signature gathering campaign. And they got more than 300,000 signatures when they needed significantly less than that. One side note is that Secretary of State Denny Hoskins has been trying to throw out 100,000 signatures, but they still got the signatures even without that 100,000 signatures, which just showcases how much opposition there was from the public to this map.
After a short break, we'll get into how courts in Missouri and even the U.S. Supreme Court have affected redistricting efforts in Missouri in this cycle and beyond. In the Missouri redistricting battle this year, the courts have played a major role. Several cases have been brought by opponents to the new 2025 map, challenging whether it could even be implemented in the first place. One of those cases questioned whether mid-decade redistricting was even legal under the Missouri state constitution. In a 4-3 ruling, the Missouri Supreme Court decided it was constitutional, on the grounds that there was nothing in the Constitution explicitly against redrawing lines mid-decade. In describing that decision, Jason Rosenbaum, an aficionado of niche 1990s media, popularized the term for it, the Air Bud Rule. In the 1997 Disney film, Air Bud, a high school coach tries to play a golden retriever as part of his basketball team. The opposing coaches object, but after consulting with the rule book, the referee makes a consequential declaration.
You check in your rule book, but you won't find anything in there that says a dog can't play.
He's right. Ain't no rules that the dog can't play basketball.
Well, apparently, in Missouri, ain't no rule saying they can't redraw lines mid-decade. And Jason found that it wasn't just a punchline.
I'll be honest, when I brought that up multiple times, it did have sort of a mocking connotation to it. But the reason why I kept bringing everything back to Air Bud is, like, when I brought that up to Republicans, they're like, yeah, that's exactly the argument. And that's exactly the argument that won.
Well, let me ask this. I don't know any other way to ask it, but our Missouri courts, do they have like a certain, is it fair to say that they lean toward a certain judicial philosophy more conservatively, maybe?
No, that's a great question. I think that the Missouri Supreme Court is a remarkably unpredictable judicial body. They have a majority of people that were appointed by Republican governors. So I would think it is more Republican leaning than it was maybe 10 years ago. But because these judges have to go through what's known as the Missouri Nonpartisan Court Plan, and that three possibilities are given to the governor, and governors don't have carte blanche to choose whoever they want, you just often have judges that just behave more unpredictably than like the U.S. Supreme Court. In this case, mid-decade redistricting was allowed to happen by a 4-3 margin. And all four of the yay votes were from Republican governors. But there was a Republican appointee that said, no, you can't do it. There was another legal case about whether just turning in the referendum signatures froze the new congressional map. And it was unanimous that the answer was no. So there's even instances where they agreed and crossed party lines on that. So I would push back against the idea that this is like a MAGA court or a Republican-dominated judicial thinking court. They just basically make decisions based on how they interpret the law.
So the courts have been weighing in here, and as you're saying, like in somewhat unpredictable ways, and the opponents, it feels like, have tried to hit it from every possible angle, but also it feels like they've been losing at every angle.
Yes and no. I mentioned before, they have lost a lot in court. The referendum situation is still ongoing. They did not succeed in getting the Supreme Court to say that the new map was suspended just by turning in the signatures. But there will come a point where Secretary of State Hoskins has to make a decision on whether to accept the referendum being on the ballot or rejecting it.
But when it's all said and done, it is likely that a referendum on the new map will be on the ballot in November. That's when Missourians can vote to accept or reject the map. And what if voters do reject the map? Technically, Missouri will have conducted its entire 2026 election under an invalid map. But then, thanks to the Air Bud rule, the Missouri legislature can just draw another map.
Yeah, that is a great point. So there's nothing stopping the legislature from just drawing a new map if the 2025 map is rejected. I mean, that mid-decade redistricting ruling made abundantly clear that they can just draw a new map as many times as they want. I think that probably will be what they do.
And Jason thinks the Republican-led Missouri legislature may simply redraw the map again, but not just because they can. A landmark decision this past April out of Louisiana by the U.S. Supreme Court made it much easier to break up majority Black and minority congressional districts without violating the Voting Rights Act. So a new map could hypothetically break up the first district too, the district that encompasses St. Louis and North St. Louis County. They can just break it apart, just like they did the 5th district in Kansas City. This could result in an 8-0 Republican map in Missouri.
The problem, though, for proponents of that process is there's nothing stopping the referendum people from gathering signatures and putting it on the ballot again, especially if all the court cases say you can do a referendum on a map. So we might be in an infinite redistricting loop unless something is put in the Constitution that says you can only do it at the beginning of the decade.
I hear what you're saying. So it's not even just this immediate election, the one that's happening in November, but there's this long-term chaos of more redistricting, more referendums, just back and forth, as you said, the infinite loop of it.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to the first district, for instance. So the Louisiana case allows basically for the legislature to turn the first district, which is by far the most Democratic district in the state, into, I wouldn't say it would be a heavily Republican district. It would probably be a pretty competitive Republican-leaning district. But there's nothing stopping them from doing that anymore. Now, the only thing that I think would stop them is the fact that it could backfire. The reason why the first district exists is because of an unusual alliance between Republicans and Black Democrats in St. Louis. And the alliance basically made a first district that was almost certainly going to elect a Black congressman or congresswoman, and it made the surrounding suburban districts more Republican. So I will just point out, a lot of Republicans who are calling for the first district's dismantling voted for a map with the first district the way it is. Now, what they'll probably say is, well, we had to because we thought the Voting Rights Act made it difficult to make it significantly less African-American. But if you talk to any redistricting expert, they will say that the legislature could have reduced the Black population at any point to 30 or 25% and still be VRA compliant. They just didn't want to do that because it would make the second and third district Democratic leaning. So this is an example where opponents supported the concept of the first district until Donald Trump said that seats like the first district were racist. And now they're just sort of falling in line. I don't usually speak as plainly as that, but it is very obvious that's what happened here. Because the first district benefits Republicans just as much as it benefits Black political power. That's why that alliance was in place in the first place.
Right.
So I could see a situation where Republicans are maybe pressured to go after the first district, but they're just like, it's too risky. And it's just going to create really weird districts that have no regional commonality with each other.
I understand. But we don't know what's going to happen.
No.
So reflecting on your months of coverage of redistricting, are you surprised by the way that this has gone?
Yes.
In what ways?
I didn't think it would happen. I thought that Republicans wouldn't go after the 5th district because it's too risky. Mm. It makes potentially 2 to 3 districts in Kansas City competitive in a wave election. And as I mentioned, if those rural counties end up becoming less Republican over time, you basically went from a 7-to-1 map to maybe a 5-3 map. Mm. So that in itself is surprising. I am very surprised that they went about it the way they did. When everybody knew that this could be put up for a referendum, I'm not sure the White House knew that. They may claim that they do, but I don't think they did. I also just think that this entire redistricting melodrama could be completely irrelevant to who controls the House.
Mm.
Like, what I think people are missing here is, first of all, Democratic states have retaliated too. So, yeah, at this point, Republicans are going to have an edge, probably, I don't know, between 4 and 5 seats. But that doesn't matter if Republicans are getting blown out in states where they can't redistrict. New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Colorado. We're not even taking into consideration that the gerrymanders in Texas and Florida hold up. And if, for example, some of the districts that are very Latino heavy that ended up voting for Trump end up voting very Democratic leaning, you may only gain like a couple of seats from those states instead of 5. I think that is also surprising that people can't see how myopic this is. I will say that if the Republicans do target the first district, it will be crossing a line that I think is much more serious than Kansas City. I don't want to underplay how significant this is for Kansas City. It is. But this would be breaking decades of a mutually beneficial political alliance. And when you break an alliance, you can't put it back together by just saying you're sorry after you do it. I think a lot of Black Democrats who are willing to work with Republicans on a lot of important but maybe less controversial issues, I don't think they're going to trust them after this. So I think that that is another thing that Republican legislative leaders have to think about before they go after the first district. Because I think for Black Democrats, it's not necessarily about party. It's about the idea that having a Black congressperson makes Black political power possible in state and local elections. And that has become abundantly clear throughout the history of the first district. I think that they're not going to let that status quo just disintegrate without a lot of tangible consequences.
Jason Rosenbaum, thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you so much.
On June 16th, Missouri election officials began mailing ballots to overseas and military voters using the new 2025 map. Absentee voting is also underway under the new map. Even the county clerk in Columbia, who said she would not update her voter list, ultimately decided to go with the new map to avoid chaos. Although there's still more to play out in the theater of court, at this point, it is simply too late for the August primary, which will be conducted under the new gerrymandered map. As for the November general election, barring some unexpected intervention, it will also likely use the new map. What remains to be seen is what happens after the election. Find the latest coverage of Missouri elections and redistricting at stlpr.org. The last day to register to vote in the Missouri primary is Wednesday, July 8th, 2026. To check your registration, visit the Missouri Secretary of State's website, where you can also see whether your district has changed. In a future episode of Meet Me, we'll hear from people who are seeing those lines shift up close. You've been listening to Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. Share this episode with your family and friends, and follow us on Instagram at MeetMeSTL. By the way, Jason Rosenbaum has his own newsletter. Sign up at stlpr.org/newsletters. This episode was hosted, produced, written, and mixed by me, Luis Antonio Perez, with editing by Alex Hoyer and Brian Heffernan. Meet Me's engagement producer is Paola Rodriguez, who also engineered the interview. Editorial support from Laura Hamden. Brian Heffernan is our executive producer. Theme music by Cutta and Friends. Special thanks to Jason Rosenbaum and Fred Ehrlich. Grant support comes from the James S. McDonald Foundation. Meet me back here next time.